This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. Your source for Pan-African news and world developments, I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight,
Pope Francis made a very strong speech today calling for governments around the world to work together and make migration a safer option. And he particularly stressed that war and climate change are driving hunger and forcing people to migrate around the world.
That was reporter Josephine McKenna speaking on the Pope's address today at the official ceremony of World Food Day in Rome. Details coming up.
Also, Saturday's massive truck bombing in Mogadishu so far has claimed more than 300 lives and wounded at least 429. And protesters in the Kenyan city of Kisumu defied a local government ban on rallies today to demand reforms in the country's electoral commission.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on African News Tonight.
Our top story, the death toll keeps climbing after Saturday's massive truck bombing in Mogadishu. By today, the death toll count was 300 with at least 429 wounded. Analysts say the Somali government must be more vigilant against improvised explosive devices if the country is to avoid similar attacks in the future. From Nairobi, VOA's Jill Craig has more.
It's being called the single deadliest attack in Somalia's history. A huge truck bomb that detonated in the middle of a busy Mogadishu intersection on Saturday. Its magnitude stunned a city already well accustomed to deadly bombings by the Al-Qaeda-linked terror group Al-Shabaab. Somalia's president, Mohamed Abdullahi Farmajo, accused Al-Shabaab of the attack, although no one has yet claimed responsibility. Rashid Abdi, Horn of Africa Project Director for the International Crisis Group, says the horrendous loss of life eclipses anything seen in Somalia in the last two decades. He says the government needs to take greater precautions against vehicle-borne explosive devices.
For the next decade, Al-Shabaab will continue to be a threat, and I think they will continue to launch these kind of suicide attacks. So, you know, expectations are that as we go forward, Somalia will continue to improve its countermeasures in basically detecting and interdicting these kind of VBIDs.
Abdi says that the internal security apparatus in the country needs to be strengthened, but notes that the task cannot be completed in a day. He also notes the attack happened days after Somalia's defense minister and army chief of staff resigned.
And there have been, I think, consistent reports of friction within the security services themselves. So it is quite plausible that, you know, there was a serious lapse of security largely brought about by this crisis. That is quite conceivable.
Abdi Rashid Hashi, executive director of the Mogadishu-based Heritage Institute for Policy Studies, believes that something positive needs to come from the situation.
So I think the government, can do better. And the first order of business is to, you know, use this anger and this agony to galvanize the Somali people for a common agenda and a common, you know, common interest.
The president has declared 3 days of mourning, announced that flags would be flown at half-mast, and responded to the call for donated blood. Former Al-Shabaab commander Mukhtar Robo also donated blood, saying those who are behind this, whose fingerprints are on this, must refrain from shedding the blood of Muslims and repent. You are not going to go to paradise by killing innocents. More than 30 severely wounded patients were airlifted to Turkey Monday, including a VOA freelance reporter. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
Also, the U.S. State Department said the United States condemned the attack in the strongest terms. And as Jill said, those wounded in the attack was VOA reporter in Mogadishu, Abdul Qadir Mohamed Abdulay.
Protesters in the Kenyan city of Kisumu defied a local government ban on rallies today to demand reforms in the country's electoral commission. This is the fourth day in a row demonstrators have marched on the commission's offices. Mohamed Yusuf reports from Kisumu, Western Kenya.
Protesters marched to the offices of the Electoral Commission offices in Kisumu city center. But in the afternoon, police used tear gas and water cannons to disperse the crowd. One person was killed. John Omondi is a businessman and was one of the demonstrators.
We are in the street because we want change in Kenya. Because Raila Amolo Odinga has fought for change for so long, and we've not managed or able to get that change, but we'll still push on for demonstrations.
Kisumu is the hometown of opposition leader Raila Odinga, and he enjoys strong support in the city. Odinga has challenged the win of incumbent President Uhuru Kenyatta in the August election. The Supreme Court overturned the outcome, saying the presidential results were either transparent or verifiable. The court ordered the Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission, or IEBC, to conduct the new election within 60 days of its September 1st ruling. Since then, Odinga has demanded the commission fire members who were allegedly involved in the August electoral irregularities. The commission has said it has no time to make changes. Last week, Odinga withdrew from the October 26 rerun election, blaming the commission and the ruling Jubilee Party of planning to rig the vote. Omondi says Odinga has not gone away from the country's political scene.
The fact that Raila withdrew from the presidential race doesn't mean he withdrew it completely, because he's still waiting for the reforms in the IBC sector. And when any change takes place in the IBC sector, he will still be in the race.
However, the opposition has vowed to continue with its weekly protests at the commission offices. Protester Joseph Otieno says more pressure must be put on the Electoral Commission. This demonstration is not that big as we wanted it. We want one that will take place every day and night. This is a joke, and the only way we can get change is pushing for daily demonstrations. Meanwhile, Amnesty International and Human Rights Organization have accused Kenya police of killing 33 people while breaking up post-election protest. In the report titled Kill Those Criminals, the organizations document what they call the use of excessive force in quelling protest in opposition-held areas. Police have previously denied killing protesters. The Interior Minister said 9 people have died since August, 3 more on Friday in Bondo in the west of the country. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Kisumu, Western Kenya.
Today marks World Food Day, and Pope Francis, speaking at the official World Food Day ceremony in Rome, called for governments around the world to collaborate to make migration a safer and voluntary choice. He said that assuring food security for all requires tackling climate change and ending conflicts. This year's theme for World Food Day focuses on addressing migration through investing in food security and rural development. Global hunger has risen for the first time in over a decade, affecting 815 million people, or 11% of the population. Reporter Josephine McKenna spoke with me about the Pope's speech, which pointed out the main causes of hunger.
Pope Francis made a very strong speech today, calling for governments around the world to work together and make migration a safer option. And he particularly stressed that war and climate change are driving hunger and forcing people to migrate around the world, creating what we've seen as a migration crisis in particular countries.
Also, this year's theme of World Food Day focuses on addressing migration through investing in food security and rural development. Did he touch on how this can be achieved?
Well, he spoke very generally about the need for governments to work together and stressed that there needs to be a lifestyle change. This is something that we've heard him speak about before, but he says that what's at stake here is managing human mobility and trying to offer people greater responsibility, greater coordination between governments, saying that the main underlying causes of hunger, what causes people to migrate, are conflicts and climate change. Now, it's interesting that he spoke about climate change. It's not the first time, but he said that it's up to countries to support the climate accord. This was a jab at the United States, suggesting that some countries are moving away from the climate accord, and we know that the US has rejected the Paris climate accord. So this was a particular statement that he made, having a go at the United States and President Trump's decision to move away from that agreement.
And I know another big issue for people migrating is war and conflict. What did he have to say specifically about this?
Well, he said that conflict and climate change are forcing people to migrate. And we've seen that with so many people, particularly from sub-Saharan Africa, who've been migrating from North Africa across the Mediterranean to Europe. And he spoke about martyred populations, people suffering from decades of war, many of which could have been avoided, he said, or at least stopped. And yet they spread such disastrous and cruel effects, as he said, highlighting food security and the forced displacement of people. Now, this address was very important today, of course, because it is on what's known as World Food Day. It marks the concern that exists around the world for global hunger, around 800 million people affected by hunger, and this is his contribution. He wants to see greater responsibility from developed countries to address these major issues, climate change, hunger, and the link between those big issues that are driving the migration crisis.
That was reporter Josephine McKenna. She spoke with me from Rome.
With nearly all the votes counted, Liberia's top two candidates in this month's presidential election are expected to soon launch their campaigns for the runoff vote. International soccer star George Weah and Vice President Joseph Boakai topped the list of the 20 candidates. With more than 95% of the ballots tallied, the National Election Commission count yesterday showed that Weah had 39% of the vote, Boakai had 29%. Although the National Election Commission has not yet announced a winner in the runoff, it appears neither Weah nor Boakai can capture the 50% needed for an outright victory. That means they'll compete in the November 2nd second round vote. The winner of that election will replace President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf in what will be Liberia's first peaceful democratic transfer of power in more than 70 years.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehi Swuhib. 18 past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. Saturday's massive truck bombing in Mogadishu so far has claimed more than 300 lives and wounded at least 429 people. And protesters in the Kenyan city of Kisumu defy the local government ban on rallies today to demand reforms in the country's electoral commission. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
The Seychelles is reporting its first plague case, a man who recently traveled to Madagascar, which is battling a severe outbreak of the disease. The government has responded by tracking the patient's contacts and has given preventative antibiotics to hundreds of people. Both bubonic and pneumonic plague can be treated with antibiotics, but untreated, they can be deadly. The World Health Organization has reported more than 600 plague cases in Madagascar since August, with nearly 60 deaths. Most of these cases were pneumonic plague, which is the most dangerous and is spread by human contact. Most of the cases also are in urban areas, raising the alarm that it could spread quickly. The WHO and the Red Cross have mobilized international resources to halt the spread. Madagascar usually experiences plague outbreaks every year, but most are bubonic plague, which is transmitted by flea bites. Most are also in rural areas.
In Malawi, the government has warned farmers of an invasion of swarms of red locusts in Mulanje, in the southern part of the country. This poses a threat to food security to the majority of farmers there. Their crops were recently attacked by the fall army worms, which has devastated harvests in southern African countries. But government officials say they have asked the International Red Locust Control Organization to intervene. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
Minister of Agriculture officials say in a statement that the swarm of locusts was first seen last week in most parts of Mulanje district. The most affected areas include Unyolo, Sanjika, Ntiza, Temba, Samera, and Golden. The statement further says that so far, the pests have damaged 10 hectares of cassava, maize, banana, sweet potato, and pigeon peas. Geoffrey Chingoma is the director of crops in the ministry.
Actually, we have talked to our colleagues in Zambia, the International Red Locust Control Organization for Central and Southern Africa, in which Malawi is a member. They're bringing a helicopter soon, and we'll use that helicopter to fly and track the swarms of locusts and even do chemical sprays.
Eliot Zitsanza as the acting director of the International Red Locust Control Organization for Central and East Africa. He says the organization is preparing for their mission in Malawi.
We are still mobilizing, so as soon as we mobilize, then we will be able to inform the nation in Malawi. Minister of Agriculture, those are the ones who will be able to inform everybody else. When we are ready, we will tell them.
The locust agency says swarms can sometimes include 40 million insects. Each one can devour its weight of 2 grams and can consume up to 80 million tons of plants a day. It says if the swarms feed exclusively on crops, they could deprive about 100,000 people of food in one day. Agnes Chikoti is a small-scale farmer in Mulanje district. She says that the locust has damaged nearly half of her cassava field, and she is worried that the delayed intervention could destroy many of the crops. She says what sort of arrangement is the International Red Locust Organization officials are talking about. She says they are supposed to be well prepared always, and they need to rush to help them because their crops are getting damaged. But Chingoma says the farmers should not panic.
They will come soon, but we normally have plan B. Plan B is that we'll keep tracking the locusts when they settle in an area, because right now they're still flying around. If they settle in an area and they start damaging crops, we can do ground sprays.
Meanwhile, Agriculture Ministry is advising farmers to immediately report the presence of swarms to the nearest agriculture office. Last year, red locusts, believed to have migrated from neighboring Mozambique, destroyed nearly 500 hectares of maize and sugarcane in southern Malawi. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre.
A food festival showcasing the cooking talents of refugee chefs from 5 different countries has won the hearts of residents by connecting through the food of their national cuisines. Over the past week, local chefs have turned their kitchens over to their refugee counterparts from Syria, Eritrea, Sri Lanka, Tibet, and Nigeria. Lisa Schleim reports for VOA from the festival in Geneva.
Nadim Khadem Maljami smiles broadly as clients at this high-end restaurant applaud his culinary skills. Nadim, a 29-year-old Syrian refugee, says cooking is his passion. An interpreter explains he learned how to cook from his uncle and worked in his family restaurant in Damascus before he was forced to leave the country in 2015.
And he went to Turkey, and from Turkey to Greece, and then he walked all the way to Germany and then to the Swiss border.
Nadim's wife and 2 daughters eventually joined him through a family reunification program. He hopes this spot as guest chef will land him a job. Louis Martin is co-founder of Food Sweet Food, a non-governmental organization that initiated the Refugee Food Festival in 2016 in partnership with the UN Refugee Agency. He says the project has 2 main objectives.
The first one was to change the way we look at refugees by valorizing talents and skills, showcasing their skills. The second was to create a professional accelerator for the refugee chefs participating. And we ask to every restaurant to recommend the chef to his network and then create professional opportunities for him.
Martin says he was struck by the negative image conveyed by the arrival of thousands of desperate refugees into Europe in the summer of 2015. That, he says, inspired him and his food, sweet food partner, Marine Mandrila, to create the festival.
So we thought, okay, how can we leverage food, how can we leverage all what we've learned through our travels and food documentaries to create a better understanding between citizens and refugees.
Martin and Mandrilla brought their idea to the UN Refugee Agency in Paris. UNHCR Senior Public Information Officer Celine Schmidt tells VOA she was immediately captivated.
Food is a great way to create connections. It's also a great way to change the way people see refugees, because if someone eats well, he will maybe have another idea or perspective afterwards. But also it's a way to integrate refugees.
The festival caters to different tastes and different pocketbooks. Nadim's five-course Syrian menu is served in an elegant dining room in one of Geneva's luxury hotels at a cost of $90. People with less money to spare can enjoy delicious Nigerian or Ethiopian food at two lakeside refreshment bars for about $20. Schmidt says one of the great aspects of the festival is the collaboration between the restaurant's usual chef and the refugee chef.
The chefs who have invited the refugee chefs, they have all told us that they want to start again and that they learned something. And they were so happy to be able to learn from another chef, because food has always been inspired by different cultures and different spices, tastes.
When the applause dies down, Nadim goes back to the hotel's spotless kitchen. There he gets together with restaurant chef Michael Coquel. He happily looks on while Nadim demonstrates how to make a baba ganoush, an eggplant puree with sesame cream, which is out of this world. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyis Wahib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC.
For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Dan Crafton, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, an in-depth discussion on the unpredictable nature of Africa's presidential politics. From Liberia's peaceful transition of power to uncertainty in the Democratic Republic of Congo to confusion in Kenya. A conversation on the continent's unsettling elections on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports.
I love Sunny Side of Sports.
Please join us for a whole half hour of sports talk and news Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC GMT. On the internet, you can like me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, and read my blog. Visit voaafrica.com and enjoy the show.
The Voice of America.
VOA.